Hello, I'm Steve Punt.
I'm Hugh Dennis.
With us are James Acaster, Susie Ruffle, Daniel Barker and Rachel Paris. And this is...
The Noel Show!
Thank you very much, and we have lost some of the greats this week. The world said goodbye to a man who arguably, more than anyone, symbolised the importance of knowledge and mathematics and became an unlikely icon of popular culture. I speak, of course, of Jim Bowen.
We also lost a man who probably did more than anyone else to popularise science. He not only left us in British Science Week, but he died on the anniversary of Einstein's birth, having been born on the date of Galileo's death.
Because that's what Stephen Hawking was all about, as we know from his book.
A Brief History of Timing.
And what an inspiring life Professor Hawking led, the only Simpsons character to have successfully launched a solo career. And we'd like to add our own tribute to all the giants of British culture that we have lost this week.
To this end, there will be hidden references inserted subtly throughout the show. Keep a lookout for them.
Yes. So, what a marvellous week. What a marvellous week it's been!
From Vladimir Putin to shove his tickling stick down your trousers and say, you've provided no actual proof that was me!
Jeremy Corbyn there, ladies and gentlemen. See? Inserted subtly... throughout the show. Putin, of course, really is the man of the moment. Wherever he appears, questions follow.
Did he interfere in the US election?
Did he help Trump get elected?
Did he know about the Salisbury assassination attempt?
It's no wonder they call him the Diddy Man. Inserted subtly throughout the show. The residents of Salisbury are probably quite in favour of experts, I suspect, because nothing reassures the public like a team of people in hazmat suits telling them there's no reason to worry once they've cordoned off and decontaminated this entire area.
Soon the experts had worked out that the poisoning was due to a noxious substance sprayed in a car,
narrowing the suspects down to either Russia-connected agents or possibly Jamie Carragher. Then the substance was identified as Novichok, a deadly nerve agent manufactured in Soviet Russia.
Which is why, in a way, it is so lucky the attack took place in Salisbury, which is right next door to Porton Down, the only place in Britain that keeps antidotes to major chemical weapons. I suspect that estate agents in the Salisbury area will be taking note of the potential market here.
Are you a former journalist, KGB, FSB, or other former Eastern Bloc spy? Then why not spice swap Moscow for leafy Wiltshire? Our new seniors' village is close to all amenities, shops, parks, and major neurotoxin research facilities. For peace of mind in retirement.
The most frightening part was that the table the victim sat at was apparently so contaminated that it had to be burned. It was made of a particular kind of wood.
Knotty ash.
Subtly and throughout the show.
But it is still a very serious situation, which is why the political developments ramped up so quickly. First, the Russian ambassador was summoned by the foreign secretary, who asked him to explain what had happened.
Mr. Ambassador, as a representative of what many would describe as a merely a nominal democracy, which is but a pale shadow of the Athenian model of civic representation, I would request that you elucidate the events of this near Senecan revenge tragedy enacted in the venerable polis of Salisbury in order to expedite the verification of our hypotheses.
Sadly, no translator was available to put it into English. So no explanation was forthcoming, and therefore Theresa May had to have a top-level discussion, which obviously went something like this.
How many diplomats do we expel?
22.
Not enough.
24.
Too many.
So they went for 23. And then a game of tit-for-tat ensued, because Russia, of course, has a general election on Sunday.
Spoiler alert, Putin's going to win.
What this week really showed us, I think, is both sides of science. The bad and frightening side, but also the hopeful, inspiring side, epitomised by Stephen Hawking and the peaceful advance of technology.
For example, this week, scientists using satellite imagery discovered a previously unknown megacolony of 1.5 million penguins in the Antarctic. What's even better is they made the discovery by noticing white streaks on the ground and realised it was penguin poo that you could see from space. Hopefully a film crew is already on the way.
Here in one of the most isolated and barren corners of Earth,
lives a colony of one of the world's most majestic and magical creatures, hidden entirely from the eyes of humanity until now. In the words of the Bible, and on the fifth day, God made 1.5 million penguins, had a few beers, and forgot where he left them.
Another hopeful science endeavor is the quest to advance into space, and this is being spearheaded by entrepreneur, billionaire, and 1970s aftershave Elon Musk, who wants to go to Mars and recently said,
"It'll be an adventure, but there's a good chance you could die."
Coincidentally, also the motto of the Russian Secret Service.
Musk also said recently that
we must go to Mars for humanity to survive.
Something Stephen Hawking also believed. We need to find other planets before other planets find us. And we find ourselves confronted by one of those aliens who come here saying,
"Our planet is dying. We have travelled light years to your Earth to seek a new home."
Followed by the inevitable line,
"Which of you is Phil and which of you is Kirsty?"
The only non-nerve gas news this week was a very boring Chancellor's spring statement and an adjustment of the official basket of goods used to calculate the retail price index, which provides a regular snapshot of lifestyles and fashions.
Yeah, items that have left the basket this time include pork pies, Edam cheese and leg wax. It's a very sad day for the wax industry, who have nothing to fall back on now but candles and Silvio Berlusconi's makeup.
However, you'll be pleased to learn that Quiche Lorraine is making a comeback. Apparently, although not in Nigel Farage's house, where it's called by its proper name,
Egg Bloody Pie.
Also coming into the basket are hazmat suits, antidote tablets, and if things go really downhill,
fallout shelters and a rough guide to Mars. And that's about it.
Yes, so tutty bye, everybody, tutty bye!
Subtly through the show.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
And now it's time for the news where you live, if you live in Kettering. Please welcome our Kettering correspondent, James Acaster.
Last time I was on the Now Show, it was Christmas 2016, when world-renowned superstar and Greek nightclub owner Lindsay Lohan had criticised my hometown of Kettering for voting Leave in the EU referendum. And Kettering responded, reasonably, by demanding that she turn on their Christmas lights. I concluded that all you need to do to be invited to turn on the Christmas lights in Kettering was to slag off Kettering. So I did just that on this very programme for minutes on end. Then, Christmas 2017, this happened.
Now you have to give a very big and huge Kettering welcome to our local comedy hero who's here in his hometown tonight, ladies and gentlemen, James Acaster.
Got the bloody gig. Actually, when I decided to turn on the Christmas lights, I thought I'd do a little documentary in Kettering as well. And we went round and interviewed some of the locals. Most of them were really nice people, but it's not funny to tell you about them. So I'm going to tell you about the one person who was unpleasant. Because also, if I slag Kettering off anymore, I could become the mayor. Now, he was an old boy. I met him in the town square. It was really empty at the time. He kicked off by telling us he'd just come from a UKIP meeting. I didn't even have to tease that out of him. He then explained why he voted Leave. He said that we used to make things in this town. We had industry, and now it all comes from the outside. We don't make anything here anymore. And even though I don't agree with him, I still felt like his heart was in the right place, and it would be good to feature in the documentary as a reason why some people voted Leave. And then he went, "And there's too many foreigners here now." And I was like, "Well, that's over." Had to include that. He then went, "This country's overcrowded." Bear in mind, we're currently standing in a deserted town square. No one around at all. I said, "It doesn't look crowded." And he went, "Oh, no, never does." They're sneaky like that, foreigners, aren't they? Crowding the place up, making it look all empty. Sometimes you can't move for open spaces in Kettering. Then he did a speech to camera telling Donald Trump to keep up the good work, unprompted. He ended his speech by going, "This square might look empty now, but later on it'll be shoulder to shoulder." And I went, "Because of?" And he went, "People." And I went, "From?" And he went, "Abroad." Then he put his cap back on. We told him to take his cap off because it had branding on it for the filming. But when he put it back on, he was really amped up and all like defiant. And he looked at the camera and went, I'm putting my cap back on now. Wear it with pride. And then he put it on. It said, Yamaha. That well-known Kettering company. You all love. But things are looking up for Kettering, though. This week, East Midlands Rail have launched a second train line between Kettering and rival town Corby. So commuting to a brawl has never been so convenient. East Midlands Rail, not very popular with yours truly at the minute. That's slang for me. I left my laptop on one of their trains. I left it there because as the train pulled in at my stop, I was in a text debate with another comic. He's starting up a free speech gig lately. He started it up because he said that a lot of comedians like him, and the comedians who are on the bill, whenever they tweet something like criticising the left, they get a lot of criticism on Twitter and people are disagreeing with them. And I said to him that that's probably not really a violation of their freedom of speech. And then he told me to shut up. I then told him that I feel a bigger threat to freedom of speech is when many of the comics that criticise the right, especially any feminist comics I know, often receive death threats and rape threats from members of the public. And he said, well, that's not the same. And I said, no. It's not. No, that's an actual violation of people's freedom of speech, and yours was just people disagreeing with you and you don't like it. As I'm texting this to him, feeling like a real smart guy, I'm walking off the train, right past my laptop, losing it forever. I realised about 10 minutes later, I ran back to the platform, told them what had happened. I said, I left my laptop on the 5:25 train to Sheffield. It's in the carriage that is half first class, half standard class, at the standard class end, in the overhead storage, right next to the door, on the right, as you walk in. And they said, there is no way in hell we can find that. Pinpoint accuracy, I described that. No way in hell. They said, we can't contact our train staff. It's impossible. We have no way of contacting our train staff. So you can't contact the staff on your own train. Nope. I put a bomb on there. How about now? Contacting them now? I know you shouldn't joke about bombs, but it's a good way of getting my sweet point across. Then they said, even if they could contact the staff on their train, they wouldn't know what staff is on their train because the staff changes so regularly along the journey. They have no way of knowing what members of their own staff on their own trains. Now, I used to work in a kitchen for minimum wage where we mainly threw jacket potatoes at each other's nuts. We always knew who was working. There's a sign-in, sign-out sheet, and it was really clear who was working whenever. And we weren't in charge of a speeding train. They then said, look, even if we could contact the staff, and even if we did know what staff were on the train, we can't ask them to walk up and down the train. They often walk up and down the train. I've hid from them in the past. I know they walk up and down the train. I actually never got the laptop back. I had to change everything. I had to cancel my credit cards. I had to also change all my passwords on all my devices, all my logins and stuff like that. I changed my password to lost my laptop 1234. To give you a kind of idea of what kind of a person I am, I had to change it from scammed 5678. Anyway, I was going to not use this new train line between Kettering and Corby out of protest. But then I've had another news story informing me that both towns are about to get a prezzo. And there's nothing I like... Don't patronise me. There's nothing I like more than having my prezzo starter in Kettering, then hopping on a train, having my prezzo main course in Corby, then back on the train to Kettering to have my prezzo dessert. And that might sound like a waste of money, but those journeys will be free, as I'll disguise myself as a member of the train staff and no one can prove I'm not meant to be there. That is all the Kettering news. Until the next time this show decides to open their minds and be a little less London-centric. And to all my friends listening in the ghetto, good Weetabix to you all, and thank you.
So, as we mentioned earlier, this week is British Science Week, and who better to speak to us about it than professional science fancier and co-host with Professor Brian Cox of Radio 4's Infinite Monkey Cage, Robin Ince.
You're a popularizer of science, aren't you? So what got you started? Did Stephen Hawking have any effect?
Yeah, well,
on
I mean,
you?
All of that. This is the thing: is I'm an idiot. This is what I'm paid to be. I was an amateur idiot for a long time, and then thanks to Radio 4, I went pro in about 2008. Right, and I know what my job is. My job is to sit next to a very pretty, very intelligent man who's actually 1 year older than me, and no one believes that, right? And I listen as he talks and he kind of explains different ideas about quantum indeterminacy. And then there's a point where the audience go, he's lovely and everything, but I don't understand anymore. And then I go, oh, Brian, do you remember when Brian Blessed was on? And he goes, oh, yeah, it was great, wasn't it? And I go, yeah. And he went, oh, I want to go to Mars. And then the audience go, oh, that's all right. The other one's shouting. We don't have to listen now. We can just assimilate the ideas of the universe. So part of it was I wanted to be a kind of idiot bridge. I love science. I find it's incredibly exciting, and it does change your experience of what it is to be in this universe.
Did you have a sort of epiphany, though? Did you like it at school, or was it? Did it come much later?
I loved it at school till I got 18% in a physics exam, and Brian probably doesn't believe I even got that much.
And did you read a Brief History of Time?
Yeah. I think one of the great things that is... Right, this is... Everyone always goes on about the fact that, oh, everyone bought it, no one read it, as if it's Stephen Hawking's fault, but it's not. The thing is, science is hard. You have to read it at a different pace, because quite often on every page...
You mean incredibly slowly.
Very slowly,
very, very
yeah.
slowly.
This is the thing. Scientists have patience. You know, Peter Higgs was a young man, and he came up with an idea, and they went, this will take a while. We're going to have to start digging on the Switzerland and France for a bit, and then we're going to have to try and make machines that are almost beyond the human imagination, and then we're going to send around bundles of particles at speeds near that of light. It might take a while, and I hope you're right, Peter, because we're putting a lot of effort in. And then you, then you have this boy, does Peter Higgs go away the next week and go, oh no, I forgot to carry the two. They've started digging. You know,
But you know, we sort of in the 17th century, kind of science in Britain was like the new rock and roll, wasn't it?
Yeah.
It was sort of, it was an incredibly sexy thing to be doing, say Newton and Hooke and Boyle or whatever. And then when I was at school, much later than the 17th century, it was sort of incredibly uncool. Do you think that's now changing again? Is science becoming sexy again?
I think for lots of reasons. I mean, the fact there is now a new form of space race. I mean, earlier on you were mentioning Elon Musk, you know, and the fact that we have this idea of the possibility of attempting to terraform Mars or at least reach Mars. The fact that when we had, you know, the Higgs boson and the Higgs field, when those results came through and people just see the architecture of the Large Hadron Collider, all of those things I think have been very engaging.
When you do science-based live shows, who are the audience? Who is coming to these things?
It's very broad. There are an enormous number of people who are not scientists at all, which is why Brian can make up a lot of it.
Do you think, you know, were they here now, do you think Newton would do Hammersmith Apollo? Would he do... Faraday
well,
unplugged. Would you get that?
I'm not entirely... He was a funny, grumpy old man, wasn't he? I'm not sure he would have been the one. I don't believe that anymore. Ever since you nearly slipped up on saying, of course, when I was there in the 17th century, now he knows about my machine. The laws of physics are wrong. We can go back. We can. But I think...
My planet is dying.
That's what I love, the idea we've imagined the aliens will have the planet that's dying as opposed to it being quite the opposite. But it's... That's what worries me about sometimes when we have these ideas of Mars and terraforming Mars, is thinking we've actually got a planet which really is terraformed. It's perfect for life. So we need to maybe, first of all, work on being more careful with that.
What can we look forward to in the next few years, do you think?
Well, I think one of the... Medically, I think we're in incredibly exciting times when we look at kind of ideas of nanomedicine, you know, also just our general understanding in terms of genetics. To me, that is one of the most exciting areas. Even the talk the other day, I was chatting to somebody who's talking, you know, eventually the capability of 3D printing a liver when your one's gone off. You know, that is gone off, by the way, is the correct term for what happened. I'm afraid your liver's gone off. But it's... Yeah, these ideas are out there and they are no longer fantastical.
I fear we may have to bring proceedings to a halt, but thank you very much indeed. Robin Ince.
Thank you, Robin.
Now, of our next guest, the Evening Standard said, Ruffle deserves to be a much bigger name, so she could just add a few extra L's to the end of it. Please welcome Susie Ruffle.
The internet is one of the greatest technological innovations of our time. And I should know, I googled it. Since the internet arrived, we've been able to shop online, look up our old Joan Collinses, and stalk our exes all from the privacy of our own home. The only downside, the internet never forgets. Well, that was until the right to be forgotten ruling. In 2014, the European Union's Court of Justice ruled that irrelevant and outdated data should be erased on request. And since then, Google has received requests to remove more than 2.4 million links. And that was just from Piers Morgan. This week, a businessman is taking Google to court. He wants articles that link to his criminal past deleted from the internet. And this throws up some very interesting conversation. Of course, a businessman who is known only as NT2 wants his dodgy past to be erased. He's served his time and he's a rehabilitated man. But surely future employees have the right to know that he used to be a bit of a naughty boy. Another case featured a man known only as NT1 and was also trying to get some articles about his criminal past removed from the web. Here's an idea, guys. How about not committing crimes? Or, if you really like doing crimes, just stop getting caught. More than wanting to remove things from Google, I would like to remove that part of my brain that remembers all the stupid things that I've ever done, my Rolodex of humiliation. Hey, Suze, what about that time that you were on a bus and two elderly Chinese people got on and you asked them if they'd like to sit together and then they said, we don't actually know each other, and you sort of like reverse Rosa Parks on a bus? God, that was awful. Hey, Suze, remember that time that you were trying on clothes in Topshop and you accidentally went back into the wrong changing room and you only realised when you put on a stranger's jeans and then she knocked on the door and asked you what you were doing? I bet that made you really hate yourself. Hey, Suze, what about that time you went to register at a new doctor's and you misread the form and, long story short, it made it look like you didn't know how to spell your own name?
Okay, yep, that's more than enough, thank you.
But what does the right to be forgotten mean for people who aren't criminals? Now, let's be really honest. We've all been an idiot at some point or another online. Made a social faux pas, said something you later regret after a few too many wines, made a public declaration of love, only to be dumped just hours later. No, just me? Okay. People have started to worry that their teenage self has now been immortalised online and it will haunt their future. How much do you want your future boss's ability to see you doing a lip-sync battle to Cher's Turn Back Time, wearing nothing but a leotard and a massive wig after drinking nearly a bottle of spiced rum? Even I had to give myself a good talking to after that, and luckily I'm self-employed, so I didn't get the sack. But I did get a cold shoulder from my business partner. And yes, I'm talking about my cat. Workopolis, Canada's leading job site, lists bad social media as one of the top three reasons for people missing out on jobs. They found in a survey in 2014 that 48% of companies didn't go with a candidate because of his or her online profile. But what you say on social media, can it really affect your chances of getting a job?
Sorry, losers and haters, but my IQ is one of the highest, and you all know it. Please don't feel so stupid or insecure. It's not your fault.
So maybe this isn't true all of the time, or rather maybe it depends on who you are. But surely by editing our history, we're trying to display a picture-perfect past, which isn't really true for anyone. Like actual history, our personal history needs a bit of pain, humiliation, and some ridiculous outfits. Otherwise, there'd be no drama. Nobody would have watched Downton if it was just people in trouser suits behaving reasonably. Rather than taking Google to court or losing out on jobs because in your gap year you decided to dread your hair, started putting turmeric in your tea, or briefly joined a cult, surely we can all just give everyone a right to their past. But I really would like to get that share picture removed. How do I do that?
And now, please welcome to the Now Show, star of BBC Two's MASH Report, where she supplies enough fake news to keep Donald Trump perpetually infuriated. It's Rachel Paris.
Hello. In the week that the NRA sued the state of Florida over increased gun control, and a student sued Anglia Ruskin University for giving her a Mickey Mouse degree, and let's not forget Virgin Care recently sued the NHS when they failed to secure a contract, and with litigation Trump in power, there seems no doubt that we are living in a very special time for lawyers.
When life is hard or mildly inconvenient, or things don't go exactly how you want them to, don't think,
no.
Don't wait,
no.
Don't hesitate. There's really just one option left to you. You gotta sue.
Gotta sue.
It's what you gotta do.
Sue their ass. when that barista will insist on skim instead of whole. When your favorite player kicks it wide and it doesn't make the goal. When your multi-million company wants some sweet NHS gold. What you gonna do?
Gotta sue.
You gotta sue.
Sue their ass.
When you're squeezed tight in an elevator and someone starts to cough. When you're down about the weather or your wing mirror falls off. When your toddler's not allowed to buy his own Kalashnikov. What you gonna do?
We're not sure.
You gotta sue.
Oh, that's right.
If you got 99 problems, sue Jay-Z. If you can't let it go, sue Disney. If you don't like poems, sue Tim Key. If you hate this song, well, just sue me. Just kidding. Sue the BBC.
Don't sue me.
And if, like some, you don't like snowflakes, yet you can't take it when Pope makes honest comments on your aptitude to rule. Well, Trump's done it 2,000 times. Go straight to litigation. If people say what you don't like, go get your compensation. When someone goes against you, don't give them a pass. Do what you're gonna do.
Sue.
Yes, sue their ass.
Sue their ass.
Oh, I hope that you all feel this. You're serving courtroom realness. Shout hallelujah.
Hallelujah.
You gotta sue, can I get an amen?
Now, you may have seen a story this week about a former Nike executive called Eric Hagerman, who was so upset by world events, he went completely off the grid, moved to rural Ohio with no internet, television, radio, or papers. We thought this was a bit extreme, but we all like to get off the grid occasionally, so we've asked our audience, how, where, and why do they get away from the world?
I go to IKEA. For 2 hours, I just follow the arrows.
Oh, this is weird. How and why do you get away from the world? Sevenoaks, naked, head first, tobogganing.
Where do you go to get away from the world? My marital bedroom. Nothing has happened in there for 40 years.
So, thank you very much indeed for those audience. That's it for this week, except, take it away.
You've been listening to The Now Show, starring...
In one!
Steve Punt.
In two!
Hugh Dennis.
In three!
James Acaster.
In four!
Susie Ruffle.
In five!
Rachel Paris.
In six!
Daniel Barker.
In seven!
And Robin Ince. It was written by the cast with additional material from Liam Byrne, Sarah Morgan, Mike Shepherd and Katie Story. The producer was Matt Strong. It was a BBC Studios production.